Today is February the 3rd, Sunday AM, class on Nehemiah. We'd left off at the third chapter concerning all those that were involved in the building of the wall. And was there any question or comments concerning up to the first three chapters in Nehemiah? Okay. The fourth chapter starts out on this as far as the work that is begun on the rebuilding of the walls. And as they're beginning that work, we find in verse 1, it came about that when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became furious and very angry and mocked the Jews. He was unhappy with what they were doing. As we already looked at, he had tried to talk about them rebelling against the king. And with them continuing with the work, it produced great indignation, which resulted in him mocking the Jews. This is something that is not new. We understand that in Daniel chapter 9, that Daniel gave some insight in chapter 9 concerning in his prayer to God for God to remember his city Jerusalem and the confession of sins by the people which brought about the destruction of Jerusalem. And his prayer is for the people there in chapter 9. And in verse 25, he brings about, "So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore Jerusalem and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. It will be built again with plaza moat, even in times of distress." So we've told here that the angel talked about the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem again, and that the streets should be built again and the wall even in troublous times. And we see this happening. Of course, Daniel talked about that coming back. They came back, and he's explaining to them or told them ahead of time that there's going to be troublous times. And we see that. Not only in Ezra's time that there was fighting against rebuilding the wall again, but even in now Nehemiah's time. So we see that he is fighting against this, Sanballat knows. And in verse 2 and 3, we find Sanballat, he's mocking the Jews before his brethren and before the Samaritan army, accosting the Jews as feeble. He's mocking them, saying that they're feeble. He spoke in the presence of his brothers in the army of Samaria and said, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burned ones?" He accuses them of making themselves a fortification with Jerusalem. Now again in chapter 2 and verse 19, remember, he accused them of rebellion, and this ridicule is such that others join in. When you go back to Ezra chapter 4, you must remember again the situation that they're in when the Jews are there. You had the Jews that had already been living there since Ezra's time. And in this situation, they've been there for quite a while. They were subservient to Sanballat, the Samaritans, and others. In Ezra chapter 4 and verse 9, we find here during that time, Rehum, the commander, and Shemshiah, the scribe, and the rest of their colleagues, the judges, the lesser governors, the officials, the secretaries, the men of Erech, the Babylonians, the men of Susa, that is the Elamites, and the rest of the nations, which the great and honorable Asnaphar deported and settled in the city of Samaria and the rest of the region beyond the river. Here's the group of people that's there that has been in control all this time. And so the Jewish people have been just kind of mild-mannered, you know, living among them, being in the minority. And these greater people that has been deported there or put in there by the other governments are the ones that's in the rule. And so, of course, they would have an army. Sanballat had the Samaritan army behind him. He had all these other people behind him. So this is something that is not light. We're looking at a large gathering of people that are against the Jews. And the Jews have, you know, kind of meek, mild. They haven't done anything since then. They don't have an army. They don't have this or that. So you kind of see the one-sidedness as far as the heathen nations that are against the Jewish people. And the ridicule is such that even Tobiah the Ammonite, verse 3, was near him, and he said, even what they are building, if a fox should jump on it, it would break their stone wall down. In other words, the Jews can't do anything. They're just, you know, what are they trying to attempt? It's not going to work. And I'm sure that they remember back in Ezra's time and Zerubbabel that they had already stopped the work. They were successful with the kings and so forth at that time in the accusations that they made that they had stopped the work. Now here comes another one, Nehemiah. And he's trying to encourage the people to begin the work again. And of course they're going to go back to their same tactics. We're going to try to fight against it. We're going to go against the people. And we're going to get this gathering against them, and hopefully maybe it'll stop the work again. When you consider that if Jerusalem was rebuilt, the walls were restored again, the loss of, I guess you might say, the power, the loss of influence that Sambalat and the Samaritans and the other nation, heathen nations there, the loss that they would have had of influence over the people, because they wouldn't be able to control them no more. Those that were in Jerusalem, those that were surrounding about, would have kind of gathered together and be fortified, would have been encouraged. And so therefore in that, they would have lost revenue, probably Sambalat. You know, these people, if they rebel, we're not going to get our cut of what they raise, what they grow. We're not going to. So therefore, they tried to squall what they were doing. It was to put them down and to do that. With this happening, we find that even though this criticism is here, that Nehemiah responds to this criticism. And he takes his concerns to God in prayer, asking for relief from the adversaries. We find that happening in verse 4, that he brings this about. He did not allow the opposition to stop the work. Okay? Nehemiah knew and realized and put his faith in God. Now, he has set himself as an example before the rest of the people concerning this. And when you look in verses 4 and 5 at his prayer, you can see that it contains 5 points in his prayer that he has in verses 4 and 5. First of all, he says, "Hear, O our God, for how we are despised." So that's the first thing. God, recognize our cause. Recognize that we are despised. And in them trying to do the work that they felt that God was trying to accomplish, you know, since God was with Nehemiah and he had shown all this, in essence, if they were despising the people, naturally they would have also been mocking and despising who? They would have been despising the God of Israel. They would have been accosting him and saying things derogatory about him, because right now, who are the ones that are in control? Who are the ones that are running things? The heathens, the heathen nations, those that aren't. And, of course, what would they have served? Would they have served the God of Israel, or would they have served idols? They would have been serving idols and saying, you know, look what our idols have done for us. Look what our gods, the small G-O-D-S, our gods have done for us. And here you are claiming that your God is going to be. They did not know the true God of Israel. So they're just going to think, well, it's another idol that you all are serving. It's a made-up God just like ours. So what's he done for you? What has he done for you? What's your God done for you? Look at Jerusalem. You know, it's a reproach. You're nothing. You come back, you still can't accomplish anything. You're not going to accomplish anything. So our God's superior over yours. So Nehemiah first points out, "Hear, O our God, for we are despised," which would have also brought accusation and despisement upon God the Lord. "Return their reproach on their own heads." That's the second point. You, God, take what they're doing and you work it to them. It wasn't an aspect of help us, empower us to bring the reproach upon them, but they placed the reproach upon whose control? They placed it upon God's control. You bring the reproach how best you know how to deal with it and so forth. You return their reproach on their own heads. Third point, give them for a prey in the land. Give them up for plunder in the land of captivity. You turn them over. Could God have done that? Naturally, Nehemiah would have been well aware of what had happened to who. When Israel was in bondage, he would have been aware of what? Of what the Egyptians had done and the bondage that they were in. Did God turn their reproach back upon them? Did He show the Egyptians who He was? Did He show them the power and the might that He had over their gods? So Nehemiah is saying, Lord, You take care of it. You give them over for prey in the land. The fourth point is, he says, do not forgive their iniquity. Which you think that's kind of strange that, you know, they should be a forgiving people, the Israelites. But he says here, cover not their iniquity, conceal not their sin. Bring it to light. Let it be known. And in that, in God doing that, it would abase the heathen nations. In bringing about that iniquity, to cover not their sin. And the fifth point, he says, let not their sin be blotted out before thee. Lord, don't you ignore it. Let it not be blotted out before you. Take notice of what they are doing. Take notice in this. So this is his prayer that he's doing and saying in front of all the people. Okay? Encouragement to the people in his prayer to them, so that they don't become in a position of what he says in the latter part, for they have demoralized the builders. In that demoralization of the builders, what have they done to the people? In their treatment that Sanballat and them have done, and the despisement they've done, they've discouraged them. They've demoralized them. And this here is the sin that it was taking place. When you look at it, the sin was that Sanballat and Tobiah were causing vexation before them who were building and were treating them with contempt. Here's God's servants doing what they wanted to do, doing what God had blessed them in doing. And they have treated them with contempt and despisement. And that is the sin that they had done. The work on the wall continues, we find in verse 6. So we built the wall, and the whole wall was joined together to half its height. He did not allow this opposition to stop the work, Nehemiah didn't. And now it's completed to half the height, because he said, for the people had a mind to work. Even though opposition was there, where did they place their trust? Where did they place their trust? In God. They placed their trust in God. They had a mind to work. When you look over in the third chapter, back in the third chapter, verse 5, the Tekoites, they were responsible for making repairs in some places. But their nobles, it said, did not support the work for their masters. So the common people are the one that bore the work. Their nobles didn't help in the work, but the common people did their work. And when you look at it, they were diligent to the point of being given a second section to complete. When you look at verse 25, after him, the Tekoites repaired another section in front of the great projecting tower and as far as the wall. So they went above and beyond. They did their first part. And this was the common people. They even were zealous to the point that they did a second part. So it shows that they had a mind to work in that. When you also look in chapter 3, in verse 20, we find that Baruch, the son of Zebaiah, zealously, earnestly repaired another section. So again, we show him that he is the responsible, that he had a zeal to complete the work. And this was among all the people. So they had to realize that with Nehemiah, he had to have great influence on them. In other words, through his prayers and so forth, that he's just not another man, but God was with him. He had told them before how God had blessed him and how he had made it all available for him to come and help rebuild. So that encouraged and upbuilded the people also, that here Nehemiah, God has blessed him so far to do the work. Nehemiah told them the words of the king, how he was in their favor, and God was with them also. So even though these oppositions are faced, Nehemiah is trying to encourage the people and to build them up through his prayers that don't forget God. Don't forget that God is the one that's in control. Don't forget that God will fight for you in this. So the work is completed to half the height. They didn't allow the ridicule to stop them with the alliance that was there. That started again, we find, that the increase in the opposition of Sanballat and Tobiah, it was to the point that they recruited others to their cause of opposition. We find in verse 7 that they also recruited the Arabians, the Ammonites, the Ashdodites. Came about in verse 7 when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, the Ashdodites heard that the repair of the walls of Jerusalem went on and that the breaches began to be closed, they were very angry. This alliance was there. He forms this alliance, and he's getting ready, Sanballat is, to take this to the next level. So far, this hasn't worked, what we've tried to do, that we've ridiculed him and so far. So what would be the next step for him to take? Naturally, the next step for him to take was, well, if you won't stop on your own, then we're going to apply force. We're going to stop it ourselves. I've got the people behind me. Now realize the great army that he's got against the Jews, who weren't a fighting people. They were there. They were under the rule of the Samaritans and other heathen nations. So they weren't a fighting people. But yet, here now, we're going to take it by force. We're going to stop you by force. And so naturally, not only the people in Jerusalem, but those in the surrounding area would also have been affected. They would have been affected by this level. So Sanballat conspires with this alliance to come against Nehemiah in an act to fight against them in verse 8. After they become exceedingly angry or very wroth that they wanted to fight in this act of war. And that's what's going to happen. Remember, Sanballat had an army behind him, as recorded in verse 2. And he was going to use it now. They all then conspired together to come and fight against Jerusalem in verse 8 and to cause a disturbance in it. And they were going to stop the work one way or the other. What does Nehemiah do? Knowledge of this action comes to Nehemiah. And what does he do? Again, he goes to God in prayer and places the situation in God's hand. He and the people continue their work. They continue in their supplications to God against the threat in verse 9. But we prayed to our God. This shows that Nehemiah also had the support of the people that were with him, the workers. Because he says, when we prayed to our God. And because of them, we set up a guard against them day and night. Nehemiah is increased because of the increased opposition to this point, that he is setting up guards to help with this. It shows some of the wisdom of Nehemiah. He sets a watch to guard against Sanballat at day and night. He said the guard was against them day and night. Now, naturally, when you continue in this supplications against the threat and you set a watch to be in day and night, you're going to lose some people. Because you're going to have those that are setting as guards. Those that are setting up through the night, they'll be taken through the night, could naturally not help labor on the walls during the day. So it's going to reduce your force just a little bit of those that are going to be working. So you have those that are being taken from the labor on the walls to be set up as guards at night to protect the city and to protect the people. But again, you see, this is the reason why in verse 10 that it said, thus in Judah it was said, the strength of the burden bearers is failing, yet there is much rubbish, and we ourselves are unable to rebuild the wall. In this prayer situation that's happening, when they pray to God. I want to take just a moment to observe some thoughts which come to mind that we need to contemplate. They prayed to God because of this opposition that's coming against them, that's going to try to say, we're going to fight against you, we're going to come to war against you and fight. Nehemiah and the people, they could have prayed, we don't know what the prayer is, but they could have prayed that the war and the fighting not come about. That would be typical, to say, Lord, we ask that this fighting and opposition and this war not come about. And a lot of times today in prayers, we do the same thing. We say, Lord, don't let this happen or don't let that happen. But then, in Nehemiah's situation, if the war and fighting came about, then God would have to deliver them from being victorious in the fight. If the situation did come about for something that we pray for, don't let it come about, and then it comes about, what's our reaction? What could have been Nehemiah and the people's reaction? If you prayed that if it was God's will that the fight not come about, then when the opposition appeared to come and fight, what would you say? What would you think? That it was God's will that they came, and therefore they could have become discouraged. We do the same thing in this day and time people do when they go to God in prayer. God, don't let this happen. Don't let that happen. And when it does happen, then people come discouraged and say what? Well, God didn't answer the prayer. Or that wasn't God's will or whatever. In our prayers, we should not limit ourselves to our request. If the battle came, no big deal. God will deliver them from their enemy in the battle, showing the level of faith that they had in God. So they could have had two options. They could have prayed, God, don't let this come about. Or God, when this does come about, you deliver us. Because we know you will deliver us. Just a thought in prayer and how prayers are made and how they can be used. And how, and sometimes we can limit ourselves in our prayer, or by our prayer we can end up setting up ourselves for a discouragement, or set up ourselves for, I'm not going to say failure, but we can set up ourselves to become discouraged, angry because, well, God didn't answer. And it could be all based upon how our request was being made known, or the request of how it was done. So it's something to think about on that. They could have prayed, Lord, don't let them come against us. And in that, if they did come against them, then naturally who are they going to blame? They're going to blame God. They're going to say, well, God, you allowed this to happen. You know, why didn't you hear our prayer? Why didn't you do this or do that? And that's somewhat, I think, you see of what people do today when situations happen or occur. Any thought or comment from anybody on that concerning prayer? So Nehemiah prayed for that. The people building brought to Nehemiah's attention that the people's strength was failing due to the rubbish that abounded, so that they were being hindered from the building of the work. They had to end up doing kind of double the work. They were also aware of what the opposition was saying, that due to the disorder, they would come in unaware and slay the people to stop the work. Even the Jews dwelling nearby, they warned the people 10 times that the enemy could come upon them from various places. When you look at verse 11 and 12, and our enemy said they will not know or see. This is those talking. The enemy said that they will not know or see until we come among them, kill them, and put a stop to the work. And it came about when the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times, they will come up against us from every place where you may turn. Now here comes some little opposition from within the people. Because this was a burden upon that, the people started complaining that their strength was being exhausted, because they had to remove the rubbish, they had to do the rebuilding of the wall, and part of the workforce had left and ceased. So not only that, but we're living under the threat of a surprise attack from our enemies, and fear that this attack could lead to the outlying district where the other Jews are living. And naturally, when that happened, what would they do? When you found out your home territory was being attacked, you'd call, or some of your people that were there in Jerusalem working would end up going and trying to fight with their hometown. So then you have more of a loss of people that was there to help rebuild the wall that would be going back to protect their homeland. So you have all this going on this, and they brought it to Nehemiah's attention that their strength was failing. Sanballat was doing a pretty good job at this time. So what does Nehemiah do? In verse 13, Nehemiah, in response, places armed people in prominent places so that the enemy would see that the Jews were ready to fight. Verse 13, "And then I stationed men in the lower parts of the space behind the wall, the exposed places, and I stationed the people in families with their swords, spears, and bows." The people were in prominent places at the lower part. They were on the higher part behind the walls, and this would show the enemy that they were prepared to fight. Nehemiah did take action in preparation. Doesn't mean that his faith was not in God to protect them, but it was still they had a part to do in this. And then we see in verse 14 that Nehemiah offers encouragement to the people concerning this. He tells the nobles and the rulers, along with the rest of the people, to keep their courage up with remembrance of the God who was behind them. In verse 14, he tells them, "You remember the Lord, the great and fearful Lord." They were to fight and protect one another, their families and their homes, but God would be with them. Verse 14, "When I saw their fear, I rose and spoke to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers and your sons and your daughters and your wives and your houses." To remember the Lord. They had to have knowledge of the Old Testament writings and the happenings that went on. Because he says, "Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and you do this." This is your part. You fight for them. When you look at 2 Samuel chapter 10, verses 10 through 12, you have Joab here that he saw the battle that was between the bow. And the remainder of the people, he took some people with him, and the remainder of the people he placed in the hand of Abisha, his brother, and he arrayed them against the sons of Ammon. And he said, "If the Arameans are too strong for me, then you shall help me. But if the sons of Ammon are too strong for you, then I will come to help you." Again, his encouragement, "Be strong, and let us show ourselves courageous for the sake of our people and for the cities of our God. And may the Lord do what is good in His sight." Joab placed it back upon, you do this, you shall be courageous for your families, and you fight for your families. But again, ultimately, the Lord will be with you. He will fight for you. By Nehemiah's action of arming the people, the enemies were made aware of their plans, were known, and there was a change concerning the plan to attack the Jews. It's also revealed that God had brought their counsel to naught. Their source of deliverance was attributed to God and not to their defensive actions. So the work of the wall was continued. God answered their prayer from verse 9 in causing the enemy to change their thoughts of attack, allowing the people to return to the rebuilding of the wall. In verse 15, "It happened when our enemies heard it, it was known to us, and that God had frustrated their plan." God had frustrated their plan. When you look at 2 Samuel 15, the 15th chapter of 2 Samuel, and verse 31, you have here someone told David saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And here's David's prayer. And David said, O Lord, I pray, make the counsel of Ahithophel foolishness. Well, when you turn over to chapter 17 and verse 14, then Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Ahaziah the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. For the Lord had ordained to thwart the good counsel of Ahithophel in order that the Lord might bring calamity on Absalom. The Lord answered David's prayer here and brought this calamity about because that was his will. And you see here that he answered Nehemiah's prayer in the same way. That he brought the action that the other people were going to do, the Sanballat and them, to naught. Does the Lord work? Did the Lord work? He worked it however he did. That's through his providence, through however he did it. But he did have an effect upon man. He had effect upon many, we can see, through the Old Testament. And these people had to be aware of how God had interceded on their behalf to show them. It's unusual when you have a large army and they say they're going to come and fight you against war and you don't have nothing and you're trying to rebuild the city and have no protection or nothing else. Why would you not expect them to come? Naturally, you would think, we've not got much of a chance. But yet, the enemy did not proceed with the fight. They did not proceed with the war. That has to be divine intervention. The people need not look at how things are in reality. Because if you look how things is in reality, you see, well, we've not got a fighting chance. That's where faith comes into play. Faith in God. That God would take care of them. God would fight for them. That's what Nehemiah is trying to tell them. So whatever the situation, when you look at the reality of it, you have to walk not by sight, but walk by what? Walk by faith. That God can do anything and everything. Any question or comment so far? Okay, we'll stop there then.